Chapter 6, Making Ends Meet. When I was about 10 years old, I started stealing. I used to love to watch cops and robber shows on television, and even though the criminals always got caught, it seemed like fun to have all those folks chasing you, trying to get what you got. I reckon I just liked the idea of having all the attention. I wanted to be chased. At first, it was small stuff. Bubblegum, nickels from the tip bucket at the corner store. The more I took, though, the more I wanted to take. I didn't hardly care about the stuff after it was stolen, but nobody was chasing me over gum and nickels. I had to take something that was worth running after. That's when I started stealing groceries. Mostly everybody in our town was poor and hungry. At least they would make like they were whenever they had the chance. I knew food would be something worth coming after. The first food I ever stole was a ham, one of those big ones that Mama would slice and give all of us pieces. I knew they cost a lot because we would only eat them if Mr. Poe paid for it, or if Mama had extra money from working on the holidays. It wasn't hard to steal the ham. I just grabbed it and walked out of the store while the shop owner wasn't paying attention. I walked all the way home, cradling the ham like a newborn, looking over my shoulder for the shop owner or the police or anybody who would want to bring me to justice. About halfway to the house, though, I realized that nobody was coming. I sulked the rest of the way, thinking about what other, more expensive things I could steal next. I should have thrown the ham away, but I didn't. I set it on the couch as I came in the house, and I went up to our room. More than anything, I was discouraged at the way the day had gone. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I got into Marco's bed without showering or changing into my pajamas, which Mama always said was a no-no. He and Daniel were at Aunt Josie's for the week. I quickly fell asleep. I had a dream that night. I was me, but a tree. I could see and feel and hear just like normal, but I was in the shape of a tree. I couldn't move on my own. The wind started to blow and I swayed from side to side. I wanted to stay still, but there was no way to control myself. The wind blew harder and I grew tired. Fatigue relaxed me and the breeze carried me side to side. I let it control me, the wind's rhythm rocking me into a daze, to and fro, to and fro. Then the thunder came. It boomed through the night, and the rain came down harder. The wind howled and shook me, to and fro, even faster than before. I let my tree body move with the wind, but it hurt this time. I shook so hard that fruit started falling from my branches. First, just a few, what looked like peaches, then tens, then hundreds. The sound of my fruit falling against the ground was almost as loud as the thunder. "Wake up, boy. You talking in your sleep?" Mama had me by the shoulders, shaking me back and forth so hard my head was rocking. I blinked a bunch of times real fast and opened my eyes wide so she could see I was paying attention. "Boy, where that ham downstairs come from?" "It came from the corner store." Mama pinched my nose real good, like she always did when I told a lie. "Ouch, Mama. Why you pinch me for? I ain't lie." "Don't say lie, boy. That's a bad word." "I believe you, but I also know you ain't got no money for no ham like this. So who got it from the corner store is what I want to know. How did you get this ham?" I pondered for a second, hoping she couldn't see my nervous expression in the dark. The prospect of another nose pinch seemed awful, so I told the truth. Kinda. "I took it, Mama. I was hungry, and I figured Daniel and y'all was hungry too. So I just sneaked it from the store. I knew it was wrong, but I was too scared to turn back. I'm sorry." Mama sat on the edge of the bed and cupped her face in her hands. She used to say it was her, "I love you, but you work in my nerves" position. She let out a sigh. "It's not good to steal. You know that. People in this town don't have much, just like us. They work hard for everything they got just to make ends meet, and we ain't nobody special to take it from them. Even if we was, that's just not the kind of people we are. I don't want you stealing. We have always made do one way or another, and even though I wish I could do better by y'all, we got pride in our name. Nobody can look down on us and say we needy or beg or steal for nothing, you understand? What would your brothers think, you supposing to be a role model for them? I dropped my head in shame. I know you was trying to do right. This can be just between us, but please, no more stealing, okay? Okay, mama. The next week was pretty uneventful. We had ham and eggs that very next morning, ham and potatoes that night, and so on and so forth. The week after next, though, I stole again. I needed something bigger this time, something that was going to get more attention. Something that even if people didn't see me take it, they would miss it and try to do some sort of investigation after I was gone. I thought about the jewelry store, but I didn't know how to get through the glass case. I didn't want to risk going back to the corner store and getting in trouble for the ham, so I steered clear of there. Eventually, though, I thought of the perfect plan. The diner. The diner was the coolest spot in town to hang. All of the old church people, high schoolers, and working moms could be found there, depending on the time of day. The diner was always busy, which meant that they were making money. They kept a tip jar at the front register. I guess they figured it was fairer for everybody to split the tips, even if some people worked harder than others. I would steal the tip jar. That way, not just a manager would be trying to catch me, but maybe some people that worked there too. I didn't want to keep the money, but they wouldn't know that. I would take the jar and run, and they'd have to try and catch me. It was a hot night with a cool breeze. The humidity was something you had to get used to where we lived, and we did, but every now and again you'd stop just to breathe and soak up some sunlight and realize how thick the air was. Walking was to swimming as breathing was to drowning. There were only two clouds in the sky, drifting slowly but close to each other, in their own world. I watched my feet for each step I took toward the diner. Focusing on my steps helped me ignore the knot in my throat. The repetitive sound of my footfalls on the sidewalk made me calm. I counted my steps. 1, 2, 3. Would I be fast enough? Should I take the jar while they watch me, or should I try to sneak and do it? What would people there think of me? 44, 45, 46. All of these thoughts scared me, but the excitement of each question gave me the courage I needed to keep walking forward. 110, 111, 100. I was there. My last 112 steps had brought me to the diner. It was one of those big diners from the 50s that had been renovated on the inside to keep it looking like the 50s, but operating in the current day. I didn't know what it was called. I'm not sure anybody did. Maybe it didn't have a name. There was a massive lighted sign outside that you could see from a mile away that said Diner. Around town, it was known as just that. I walked into a space with green and white checkered tile, waitresses in aprons, and the smell of grease and sugar. The light was so bright in the diner, I had to squint as I entered. Everybody was busy, hustling and bustling back and forth. Small and not needing immediate service, I went seemingly unnoticed. It was working mom time. All the ladies from town in their nurse scrubs, grocery store uniforms, and other job clothes filled the tables, talking and laughing, smoking cigarettes with their coffee, enjoying what was likely their only real free time each day. A waitress walked by and stepped on my foot. Oh, I'm sorry. Watch out, little man. I'm sorry, I said. The knot in my throat returned and my stomach started to twist and flip. I could leave and go home and nothing bad would happen. But I had come so far. I had to do it. I told myself I would, and so I had to. I spied the tip jar on the counter right next to the cash register and made my way over. My face didn't reach the top of the counter, but I could still see the jar once I got right up close to the stand. A waitress with greasy hair was arguing with a man with a greasy shirt. He looked like the manager. I didn't too much know what a manager looked like, but he was one of the only men I saw in the diner then, so I figured that's what he had to be. The woman stormed off back toward the grill, snatching her apron off the counter along the way. The man had taken some money out of the cash register and was counting it with his back to the counter. I stood on my tippy toes and swiped the glass jar. I held it low, right by my stomach with two hands. It was heavy, heavier than a ham. I turned and walked out of the diner into the humid night air. I was supposed to be walking slowly so that I could be caught, but my heart was pounding so fast, I was halfway down the street before I realized I was nearly galloping. I slowed down to a trot and eventually stopped altogether to breathe. I held the jar up under the streetlight and examined it. It was a humongous mason jar with a square notebook paper taped to it. It said "Tips" in a scribbly font that was highlighted in orange. The jar was filled about 3/4 of the way with coins, and a handful of dollars set on the top. It wasn't much money, but I thought somebody would miss it. Somebody did. She was like a blur in the night, and I didn't know what I was looking at until it was almost too late. In a stark white smock and a pink apron flapping in the wind, she was running toward me. I looked down at the jar in my hands and back at her as she approached like a raging bull. I turned to run and stumbled over my feet. I recovered and dashed off, still gripping the jar, scared and exhilarated at the same time. I didn't make it very far, 20 yards at most before the waitress caught me. She turned me around and jacked me up by my shirt collar. I recognized her as the waitress who had been arguing with the probably manager back at the diner. Her name tag read Betty. "You thought nobody would see your grubby little hands sneaking off with our tips, huh? We work hard for them tips," Betty barked at me. I had an inappropriately gleeful smile on my face as she jerked me around by my collar. Betty whipped her head back and scrunched her face up in disgust. I was just so happy. This is what I had waited for. "Well, you gonna say something for yourself or just sit there looking creepy? I ought to take you back to the diner and make you wipe every table." "I'm sorry, ma'am." "Oh, you'll be sorry." Betty snatched the jar from me while keeping a grip on my collar with her offhand. Coins flew out of the top of the jar and splattered into the road, sparkling in the streetlight. She was a strong lady, and fast, too. She probably ran track in high school. She didn't look too much older than Keela. "Matter of fact, I think you need to unhand my child." I knew that voice anywhere. I was only one person's child to claim, too. I turned my neck and Betty looked up to see my mama approaching from across the street. Betty let my collar go and stepped back half a step, planting her feet squarely on the pavement. Mama walked up, still silent. She wasn't one to make a big scene. She had always been a very observant person. The girls in her house growing up were encouraged to listen first and speak when necessary, and it had made her perception elite. She looked at me in my collar, Betty in her apron, the tip jar in her hands, the pennies on the asphalt. Then she asked a question she already knew the answer to. "What is going on here?" "This child of yours was down at the diner a little earlier. Saw fit to grab our jar of tips we work hard all night for him. Walked smooth out the front door. I saw him, ran after him. Told him I would take him back and make him clean tables, but I see he's spoken for now. I was just upset. We got the jar back. I suppose everything is fine," Betty explained. Mama looked down at me. "Is this true?" I nodded and looked at my shoes. I was halfway ready for a slap on the neck, but it never came. When I looked back up, something strange was happening. Mama had begun to tear up. I had only seen my mama cry a few times, and never when one of us got in trouble. We were usually the ones to cry. But there it was, plain as day, tears sliding down her face. She spoke with a broken voice. There was a hue of sadness in her tone that made my heart feel heavy and slow beating. "There's 5 of us. We do all we can and we usually don't have no problem. But he just recently started this here. This isn't something we do. He's special, you see. He probably heard me saying something about money around the house and thought it was his responsibility to do something. I think it's just a misunderstanding. I'm so sorry. Please don't tell the manager. Bewildered, I looked at Betty. The menacing visage had softened into a compassionate gaze. She stepped forward to my mama and hugged her. Mama began to sob and Betty rubbed her back. They stood there like that in the street for a while. I stood there confused. Mama and Betty exchanged some words in low tones between sniffles. Betty had started crying too. Here, take it. I can't do that, Mama said. No, I'm serious. We make enough in tips in a night. This jar won't hurt us too bad. Besides, the night is just starting. We got plenty more money to make. And nobody saw who took the jar but me. So either one of y'all can come back in there without anybody disturbing you or looking at you crazy. Mama stood there looking like she wanted to cry all over again. Betty reached out and grabbed Mama's hand, turned the palm upright, and put the jar into it. You come down whenever you get off one of these nights, and I'll fix up something right for you. MacArthur don't too much pay attention unless it benefits him. Me and the girls will make sure you're taken care of. Mama sobbed again and gave Betty a hug. Then, just like that, the waitress was gone. Mama and I turned to go home. We walked most of the way in silence, but I just had to know. Mama, what happened back there? Something only mamas can understand. Am I special, Mama? You ain't no different from anybody else in any way that counts, boy. But you told Betty, Miss Betty, to you, little boy. And stop asking me so many questions. I told you I didn't want you stealing no more. I'll deal with you when I get home. When Mama said there were no more questions, there were no more questions. I don't remember what my punishment was, but I do remember Mama putting a new coat for Daniel on layaway with the tip money. I didn't understand at the time. Well, maybe I won't ever understand. The ties that bind black women and mothers in our world. Our great big world, but also the tiny world of our community. All they had was each other. I did learn something about being special that day, though. Funny thing about special is it sounds like a good thing, but it's not. At least, not always. And depending on if somebody means good special or bad special, you'll be treated different. I spent the rest of my life trying to figure out which special to be and when, and how I can be special enough to keep tip jars when I need to. I reckon it's a shame that, for all that figuring, I'm still not sure which kind of special I actually am. I don't know if this thing, this label, what makes me me, is good or bad. If I'm good or bad. I never craved the pity. I only wanted attention.